Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill, where it is currently 39 degrees. They're registering 41 degrees out at the airport right now, where they have southeast winds to 10 miles per hour. They're calling for a little more rain today until 1 p.m. at least. Mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day with south winds to 20, gusting to 25. A 30% chance of rain before 7 tonight, then mostly cloudy skies with a low of 29. Southerly winds to 15, turning to the west after midnight. Those western winds are going to bring us sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 36. Increasing clouds on Tuesday night, though. Northerly winds to 15. And snow is likely after 1 p.m. on Wednesday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Crab closes in Kodiak and the South Peninsula districts.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Thousands of U.S. troops are now under a heightened alert for possible deployment in the event Russia invades Ukraine. Here's Pentagon spokesman John Kirby.
All told, the number of forces that the secretary has placed on heightened alert comes up to about 8,500 personnel.
Kirby says U.S. troops would offer support to NATO if it is deemed necessary. President Biden was scheduled to hold a video call with several European and NATO leaders this afternoon about Russia's military buildup along Ukraine's border. The heavy presence alarms Western forces, who are worried that the Kremlin may attempt an incursion against Ukraine for the second time since 2014. NPR's Charles Maines has a reaction from Moscow.
Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said it was NATO deployments rather than actions by Moscow that were escalating tensions in the region, and blamed Western media hysteria and lies for hyping the case for war. Peskov also said Western arms shipments to Ukraine had emboldened what he called hotheads in Kiev, and said the risk of a Ukrainian attack on separatist territories in the country's east was, quote, much higher than before. NATO has put forces on standby and sent ships and fighter jets to bolster its eastern flank in response to a buildup of tens of thousands of Russian forces around Ukraine. Russia denies it's planning an incursion, but has used the crisis to demand a rollback of NATO's presence in Eastern Europe. Charles Maines, NPR News, Moscow.
Further signaling Western worries over a potential invasion against Ukraine, the U.S. is now ordering the families of embassy personnel as well as non-essential embassy staff in Kiev to leave. The U.S. Supreme Court will once again take up race in college admissions. From member station GBH in Boston, Kirk Carapezza reports the court will hear a pair of cases challenging race-conscious admissions policies.
With the more conservative makeup, the justices will review one federal appeals court decision finding Harvard's admissions practices to be legal, and another upholding UNC Chapel Hill's. The group Students for Fair Admissions had sued both schools, alleging they discriminate against Asian American applicants. The group wants to end all race-conscious admissions. Harvard President Larry Bacow says the decision to review these cases puts at risk 40 years of legal precedent, granting colleges the right to create diverse campus communities. Arguments are expected to take place in the fall. For NPR News, I'm Kirk Carapezza in Boston.
The Michigan high school where four students were killed in a mass shooting late November has reopened. A spokesperson for Oxford Community School says the return to classes at Oxford High School this morning went well. Students spent the last several weeks attending classes at other sites. Yesterday, the school's principal posted a video declaring, "We are reclaiming our high school back." One of the students is now charged with murder in the death of his classmates. His parents have also been charged. This is NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The east side and southwest sections of the Kodiak Tanner Crab fishery have closed for the season, and the eastern and western sections of the South Peninsula District closed today. All waters of the east side and southwest sections of the Kodiak District closed to commercial Tanner Crab fishing at 5:59 p.m. on Saturday. That was January 22nd. Fishing in the eastern section of the South Peninsula District closes at 2 p.m. today. Fishing closes in the western section at 5:59 p.m. Fishermen's pots must be open and unbaited in the closed sections. Open and unbaited pots may be stored in waters greater than 25 fathoms in depth for 7 days after the closure. After 7 days, all pots must be removed from the water or placed in waters 25 fathoms of depth or less. Kodiak's former mayor Carolyn Floyd has passed away. The Floyd family announced this week that their matriarch died peacefully in her sleep at the age of 88. KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth has this look back at her legacy.
Carolyn Floyd was born in northeastern Oregon in 1933. She landed in Kodiak in 1955, where she spent most of her life. She had an outsized impact in the community as an educator, first as a teacher at Kodiak High School. She later taught at Kodiak College and served as the school's first president for nearly 20 years. The college library is named in her honor. Betty Walters taught alongside her during the college's early days.
She never lost sight of what her mission was. The mission was to make sure that, one, kids in our community did well in all aspects of life, and two, educationally, that they would go as far as they wished to go.
Floyd was recognized with an honorary doctorate of education in 1989 from the University of Alaska Anchorage for that mission, and she served as Kodiak's elected city mayor for 18 years. During that time, she oversaw construction of a new police department and the ice rink, and she founded Kodiak's Multicultural League. Her successor, Kodiak Mayor Pat Branson, says Floyd was a lion.
And it wasn't just locally. She was involved with the Alaska Municipal League, with the Conference of Mayors, with the National League of Cities. So just a true leader in a sense of understanding issues, working to solve those issues.
Floyd raised 4 children on Kodiak Island with her late husband, Joe, a longtime coach. He died in 2020. Kodiak's annual Joe Floyd basketball tournament is held in his honor. Those that knew Carolyn Floyd say she was a fixture in the bleachers at basketball games over the years and would even cheer for kids on the other team when they made a good play. She was also formally recognized for her work in the community and beyond in 2012 when she was inducted into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. Her son Patrick wrote in a post on social media that his mother had passed while reclined in her chair by the front window of her house, overlooking the town she loved. Carolyn Floyd was 88 years old. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
The leaders of the Alaska legislature would like to see the state budget pass on time this session, and some of them want to see the legislature pass a long-term plan for the state's finances and the permanent fund dividend. But they acknowledge there are significant obstacles in both the short and long term. Higher oil prices, growth in the permanent fund, and federal funding are all reasons the state has more money this year. Senate President Peter Michicki says it's a quandary. It could make the annual budget easier, but it also removes some of the pressure to pass a long-term plan. He is a Republican from Soldotna. He says a long-term compromise will take lawmakers crossing the divides in both chambers to talk to each other.
There's tension in all 4 caucuses. We have very different kinds of people that may have the same letter next to their name, and they just need to put their pride aside, get into the same room together, and talk those issues out.
He says the fact that this year is an election year isn't an excuse to fail to take action. Senator Tom Begich, a Democrat from Anchorage, is the Senate Minority Caucus Leader. Along with work on a fiscal plan, he's focused on a bill aimed at improving students' reading skills, which would also expand access to pre-kindergarten education. And he says it's important that the legislature pass a plan on how to spend billions of dollars of federal infrastructure and other funding. He also acknowledges that the higher revenue could be a mixed blessing.
It makes it very difficult to get a fiscal plan when people can take an easy ride in an election year. And my job is to hold people accountable to needing to put together a fiscal plan, especially because it's easier to do it now. It's much easier to do it now while we can afford to do it than it will be down the road when it's just going to become a bitter argument that pits people against each other.
He said bills put forward by him and the Senate Finance Committee that would rewrite the permanent fund dividend formula, among other things, are a starting point. He also said a decrease in the student population could allow for the state to expand pre-K without increasing overall school spending. In the House of Representatives, Speaker Louise Stutes, a Kodiak Republican, says the majority caucus is more cohesive than it was a year ago when it took weeks into the session to form a majority. The majority is mostly Democratic, but it includes two Republicans and four independents.
I would say that our priority is getting out of here in a timely fashion. And in order to get out of here in a timely fashion, we have to have a budget that has passed.
Like Begich, she says it's important for the legislature to appropriate the money that the state is receiving from the federal relief and infrastructure bills. She objects to provisions of Governor Mike Dunleavy's budget plan that use federal dollars in place of state spending. She said the federal money should add to the state services. For example, she's concerned that the Dunleavy administration relies on federal money to operate the Alaska Marine Highway System. Quote, "What happens at the end of 5 years when the federal dollars run out?" Close quote. Stutes also said that the House committee chairs will determine the agenda for bills other than the budget. She added that legislators will be aware of the need to finish their work with an election year ahead of them. House Minority Leader Representative Kathy Tilton, a Republican from Wasilla, says a long-term plan is needed to bring business investment back to the state. Her caucus's other priorities include passing bills related to elections and opposed to vaccine mandates. They also support a bill that would require that patients be allowed to have someone with them to provide support in the hospital. Tilton says she hopes the legislature can finish the budget without a government shutdown like what nearly happened last year. That would require most members of her caucus supporting allowing the budget to go into effect on July 1st, and she said that may not happen this time.
Last year, we were able to come together on the fiscal policy working group, but the outcomes of that were not what we had expected, so therefore, I'm not so sure that we would be able to come together.
Last year, minority caucus Republicans relented when the other caucuses agreed to form a group that would recommend a plan. While that happened, the plan didn't advance during special sessions. Committees have met to discuss both this year's budget and Alaska's long-term outlook. Conservation groups say the National Marine Fisheries Service has not made much progress in carrying out the recovery plan it created in 2016 to reverse the decline of Cook Inlet's beluga whales. Alaska Public Media's Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin has this report.
A report released to support the petition is called 5 Years of Failure.
It's been a little bit over 5 years now, and the population is not recovering. In fact, it's worse.
C.T. Harry is with the Environmental Investigation Agency, a group behind the petition and report. He says the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration continues to grant permits for activities in the inlet that make noise or otherwise disturb the whales.
The goal in our petition is to basically tell NOAA to follow their own advice by reevaluating how these harassment authorizations are permitted, and to not look at each one on an individual basis, but to look at them on a cumulative basis to determine the cumulative stress impact of a multitude of threats.
Cook Inlet belugas, the smallish white whales that are sometimes seen from the Seward Highway and the Coastal Trail in downtown Anchorage, have been listed as endangered since 2008. They've declined about 80% since the late 70s. The last subsistence harvest was in 2005, and still the slide continues. NOAA says 279 individuals remain. A statement from NOAA Fisheries says it's aware of the petition and can't comment on it. But in previous interviews and on its website, the agency describes the whale's decline as troubling and confounding despite lots of research. A video on NOAA's website describes the challenges the whales of Cook Inlet face, many from activities far from the water.
These may include diminishing food, habitat loss or destruction, pollution, toxins, and human-caused noise, which hampers their ability to feed and communicate. Researchers are trying to understand which of these threats may be impacting them most.
Of the thousands of beluga harassment incidents the government has allowed lately, the vast majority are for research. Some just to count or photograph the whales, but also biopsies. Liz Mehring is at Cook Inlet Keeper, one of the groups behind the petition. She says the goal isn't necessarily to stop permits for the oil industry or port construction or research, but to get the government to figure out what it needs to do to prevent an extinction.
I just can't imagine living any other place where you can drive down the highway and see beluga whales out your window of your car, and it's just such an incredible place, and to lose them would be devastating, I think, for all of us who live in the Cook Inlet area.
Cook Inlet belugas are a distinct genetic population that live in this one area. The conservation groups and the scientists at NOAA Fisheries agree that if they disappear, others are not likely to take their place. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Fort Greely's post commander says he's concerned about a recent spike in reports of COVID-19 locally and in the Fairbanks area. So he's directing garrison civilian employees who are eligible to begin working from home effective today. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
The State Department of Health and Social Services says 44 cases of COVID were reported in Delta Junction and surrounding area over the past week through Thursday, and the Health Department says 45 cases were reported over the previous week. That's more than double the number reported over the first week of January. In response to that spike, Fort Greely Garrison Commander Lieutenant Colonel Joey Orr sent a message to the workforce on Friday that says garrison civilians should transition into what's called a situational telework status beginning today. A post spokesperson says a commander can institute that kind of teleworking to protect the health and safety of the workforce. That's typically done when the weather's bad, like during last month's winter storm. It also was temporarily instituted in early 2020 when the pandemic first began exponentially spreading. There are about 225 civilian employees at Fort Greely, but not all work for the garrison, and the post spokesperson says not all those civilians will qualify to work from home. Some, like those who operate snow removal equipment, will have to show up for work. And civilians who do qualify to work from home will have to arrange it with their supervisor. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
Like many other healthcare providers, the Tanana Chiefs Conference is dealing with COVID-19 caused staff shortages at its facilities around the Fairbanks region. TCC Health Services Executive Director Jacqueline Bergstrom says the problem has been increasing over the past few weeks.
Basically, since the start of the new year, 11% of our staff have called in sick because they tested positive. And then additionally, there's a percentage, and that obviously changes day by day, of folks who have to be out because they had exposure or have kids who tested positive or immediate household members who are positive, and so they have to quarantine.
Bergstrom says that's resulting in up to 20% of TCC's over 300 healthcare employees being out due to COVID on any given day. She says the situation is forcing TCC to rely more on telehealth
to try and keep both our patients and our staff as safe as much as possible.
Bergstrom adds there are patients who must be seen in person, and TCC is juggling staff to try to cover those appointments.
But it is impacting services, and so it does lead to cancellation of appointments, and sometimes at the last minute.
She says the problem is sometimes compounded by bad weather and flight cancellations.
And so it does lead to a lot of frustration for our patients, as well as our staff.
noting that everyone is tired of pandemic precautions. Bergstrom asked that people keep social circles small, wear masks when they do go out in public, and get vaccinated and boosted against COVID.
You just have to hold on a little bit longer and try to be kind and nice to each other.
Bergstrom and other healthcare officials anticipate the Omicron variant-driven surge will be short-lived.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by GCI.
GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
Insight Daily Radio.
From food to fashion, science to tech talk, or for just plain fun, we've got you covered. From the art of all things, here's Lasana Jeffries.
Bob Fosse, the choreographer and Oscar-winning director of Cabaret, died in 1987 and left exactly $378.79 each to 66 people so they could go out and have dinner on me. George Bernard Shaw died in 1950 and left more than 300,000 pounds to develop a new, more precise English alphabet of 40 letters to replace the current one. Whatever happened with that? Gene Roddenberry, creator of Star Trek, arranged for his cremated remains to be scattered in space. And in 1997, they were shot out into space. William Shakespeare. It's been widely reported that when Shakespeare died, he willed his wife Anne Hathaway his second best bed. Some scholars say that it was an insult that he didn't leave her his best bed, but in the 17th century, a home's best bed was reserved for guests. A husband and wife slept in the second best. The note in the will was a sentimental gesture. Harry Houdini, the famous magician, bequeathed his collection of books on magic to the American Society for Psychical Research on condition that J. Malcolm Byrd, the official whom Harry Houdini hated, resigned. But Byrd refused, so the books went to the Library of Congress. Houdini also had a bronze bust of himself placed on his tomb to guide him back from the other side. Dusty Springfield, the 1960s singer who died in 1999, set aside a large sum to purchase a supply of baby food, the favorite meal of her cat, Nicholas. She also directed the executor to line Nicholas's bed with her old nightgowns and play her songs each night as Nicholas went to sleep. Thanks for listening. I'm Lisanna Jeffries.
Insight Daily Radio.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 24th day of January, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:27. It will set again at 5:17. That will give us 7 hours and 50 minutes of daylight, a gain of exactly 4 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was minus 5, set in 1947 and 2012, and our record high was 51 degrees, that was set in 1950. Looking at our local tides, we have just had a low tide here on the east side at 12:13. That was a 1.9-foot tide. Our next high tide will be at 6:05 p.m. It will be a 6.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide just after midnight here on the east side at 12:06 a.m. That will be a 1.5-foot tide. Our high tide for tomorrow morning here on the east side will be at 6:44 a.m. and be 8.3 feet. Over on the west side, you have a low tide coming up at 12:45 p.m., just about 20 minutes. That will be a 2.8-foot tide in Larson Bay, followed by a high tide at 6:42 p.m. of 11 feet, and a low tide at 12:38 a.m. of 2.6 feet. Your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 7:14 a.m. and be 13.5 feet. Mariners, here's your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Tuesday. South wind 30 knots and seas to 21 feet today. For tonight, southwest 30, seas at 18 feet, and for tomorrow, west wind 20 knots, seas coming down to 12 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight. Southeast 25 today and seas to 6 feet. For tonight, west wind to 30 knots, seas to 9 feet with freezing spray. And for tomorrow, west wind to 20 knots, seas to 6 feet, freezing spray tomorrow as well in the Shelikof. The Kodiak City Council will hold a work session on Tuesday. That's tomorrow. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. rather. It will also be holding a regular meeting on Thursday. That meeting will also be at 7:30 p.m. Both meetings will be conducted virtually. Public meetings are encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web streamed, and the web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. For those who wish to request printed meeting materials or have any questions, contact the clerk at 486-8636. Meeting tonight is the Consolidation Committee. That meeting is happening virtual, as are all of the upcoming Kodiak Island Borough meetings. That's happening at 6:30 tonight. Tomorrow, the Solid Waste Advisory Board regular meeting is happening, also at 6:30. And on Thursday, the Assembly will be having a work session, also at 6:30. All meetings will be virtual. Tune into the virtual meetings online by going to the Kodiak Island Borough website. That's at www.kodiakak.us. And you can also contact the borough clerk for any information, 486-9310. The Board of Education will be having a regular meeting tonight at 6:30 p.m. This meeting will be conducted virtually through BlueJeans. Meeting login information will be posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website. That's at www.kibsd.org, and look under the Board of Education tab. For more information, contact Bianca Clark, Secretary to the Board of Education, at 486-7566. The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center will be having their regular monthly meeting of the Board of Directors at 6 p.m. tomorrow. Guests are welcome. Call 486-6171 or email them at contact@kwrcc.org for more information on how to attend. Do you know a teen or youth group doing something positive in your community? We'll nominate them for a Spirit of Youth recognition. All nominees are publicly recognized in their communities. Research demonstrates that youth who are recognized for their accomplishments by those around them are better able to build confidence in the future. Youth and youth groups will be selected in early spring to receive the Spirit of Youth Awards. They rely on community members like you to let youth know they matter. It only takes 10 minutes to nominate someone online. Go to spiritofyouth, all one word, .org to find the nomination form. Three seats are up for election for the Kodiak Electric Association's Board of Directors. The Board of Directors consists of 9 elected voting directors and 1 United States Coast Guard appointed non-voting liaison. This year, the seats currently held by directors Linda Freed, Jay Johnston, and Matt Moyer are up for election. All 3 seats are for 3-year terms. KEA members locally elect KEA directors. Candidate petition packets are available by contacting the KEA office. To be an eligible candidate, you must be a member of KEA. Completed candidate petition packets must be received by 5 p.m. on Wednesday, March 16th at the KEA office. That's at 1614 Mill Bay Road. For further information or to request a candidate petition packet, contact Nancy B. Sweeney. She is the Communication Human Resource Specialist at KEA. Her phone number is 486-7700. The Coast Guard Marine Safety Detachment in Kodiak reminds you to check the date on your commercial fishing vessel safety decal in your window. If it is expiring soon or has expired, stop by their office downtown and pick up a checklist to prepare for your dockside exam. A safety exam is required for all commercial vessels that operate more than 3 miles from shore. That includes transiting to the fishing area. Just contact them at 907-486-5000 5918 or stop by their office in the subway building downtown if you have more questions. The Coast Guard has experienced various VHF outages in southeast and south central Alaska. Repairs are ongoing, but mariners are reminded that due to mountainous terrain, limited VHF coverage, even with fully operational VHF sites, the Coast Guard cannot always hear all VHF calls in all areas. Mariners should have a secondary means of communication on board at all times and file a float plan with a trusted person, as well as carry safety equipment on board in the event you are in a survival situation.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.